This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, leading into the Winnipeg Jets versus the Nashville Predators. We get you started with McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day puck drop in Music City, USA, 2 p.m. this afternoon. Hustler and Lawless follow us. And Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour at 1 p.m. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, including the Winnipeg Jets morning papers, is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, big show this morning. It is the NHL trade deadline preview show leading into all the action that's going to take place on Wednesday and really, every day this week leading up to the trade deadline come Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. Good morning to you both.
Yeah, good morning, guys. It's quite perfect timing, really, that the Ryan Miller trade happened. We can talk about that a little bit today and then go over all the teams, because there's a lot of names out there, and I think fans are going to be disappointed that some players don't move, Richie, but I think there will be some moves, because there's a lot of teams right now that are in the hunt. There's only really maybe 4, 5, 6 teams that you could say are pretty much mathematically out of it. And then you have a lot of teams that are still in it, both in the East and the West. So I think there will be movement, but I think, you know, when TSN puts up that list of all the players that are in play, just like last year when everybody was expecting Roberto Luongo to be traded, that didn't happen. So I think there's going to be some movement, and it's going to be exciting to see. Jets, I don't know so much, but I think other teams that are looking right now, because there's not a lot of quote-unquote buyers and sellers, Richie. There's a lot of kind of buyers/sellers. So it's going to be interesting to see here, and it's going to be fun going team by team here like we always do.
Exactly right. Team by team, division by division, breaking down everything for the NHL trade deadline. Richie, you think it's going to be a busy day this come Wednesday?
Yeah, I do. I think it'll be a busy few days, Drew. I don't know if it'll be, some people might want to jump the gun a bit like Buffalo did, and that's obviously their prerogative. I think it will be active because there are a lot of people sometimes forget that the cap is an impediment to an extent, but you only have 20 games left of the player's salary to pay. So there's a little more flexibility than I think people realize. I think a lot of teams, as you mentioned, there's kind of there's tiers of teams, but I think you're going to see the sellers are going to take advantage and move as many as they can. I think you're going to see a lot of moves. You haven't seen many moves this year to this day, and I think you will see more than last year, but as he's usually better predicting the amount of trades than I am, but I think more than last year for sure.
No, but Richie, you make a good point though, because this isn't a typical year. This is an Olympic year.
Yeah.
And so everyone planned for the Olympics in the sense of really not making any moves. We saw a few minor moves. We didn't see anything major. Mm-hmm. And now you come back from the Olympics and what, you have 5, 6 days and then all of a sudden you're in that leading days up to the trade deadline. So I think we will see more moves than last year. I don't know if we'll see the crazy amount that we saw 4 or 5 years ago, but I think there will be more, because we've seen this year that the trade market, it's a little bit different. It seems like this year you have a lot of players that are requesting trades as opposed to the pending UFAs. That was the traditional trade market. It was always the pending UFAs, the Shea Webbers, the Ryan Suters, those guys. And now we're seeing some big names out there that are asking for trades.
And Weber was an RFA, right? But before the restricted, good point. Before the offer sheet. But you're right. I mean, Suter, you have those talks and the value. Now Eddie's talking Kessler, St. Louis. So there are guys on these teams now who want out, allegedly, and they haven't really gone to deny it, mm-hmm. and are at contracts that many people think are pretty good value.
And we will break it down team by team, division by division. But here in Winnipeg, there's only one team we have to start with. That's, of course, the Winnipeg Jets. And entering into the trade deadline week, as it were, the last few days of the trade deadline week, the Winnipeg Jets find themselves just outside a playoff spot, 2 points behind the Dallas Stars for that final playoff spot in the Western Conference. Of course, the Dallas Stars still have 2 games in hand. The Jets on their roster have 6 unrestricted free agents. And of the 6, I would say that the most impactful ones are probably Olli Jokinen and Devin Setoguchi. Maybe not impactful, but the ones who play the biggest role on the team, although you could certainly say that Mark Stewart plays a significant role as well.
Yeah, those 3, I think, are the 3. Stewart probably more, because he's playing. Well, Stewart and Jokinen, I think, because they play Stewart's playing a kind of top four role right now. Mm-hmm. Jokinen's playing center and is relied on more than Setoguchi is. So, yeah.
For the most part, the Jets have been relatively quiet at the trade deadline. The first year they were back is when they traded out Johnny Oduya. Uh-huh. Last year, if I recall correctly, I don't think they did much except for acquiring Mike Santarelli off of waivers from the Florida Panthers at the trade deadline last year. This year, with the half a dozen unrestricted free agents on the roster, Setoguchi, Jokinen, Thorburn, Stewart, Adam Pardy, and Al Montoya, do you expect the Jets to be active here, or do you think that this is going to be sort of a status quo trade deadline for Jets GM Kevin Cheveldayoff?
I don't expect him to be very active. He's not a big, as we've seen so far, he doesn't make a lot of trades. I don't see him making too many moves. I could see them shipping Setoguchi out and bringing in a left winger, because Setoguchi's playing at a position, I think, right now. So I think you could possibly see him, you know, trade Setoguchi for a draft pick, trade a draft pick. Seems to like to do that for maybe a left winger, a little more comfortable in that role behind Kane and Ladd. And then I could possibly see him trading for a defenseman if the opportunity presents itself. I don't see any huge moves here. The big one would be Byfuglien, really, if there was a move, and not to say that the fact we haven't heard rumblings mean there won't be a deal, but I think that's something that probably would happen in the offseason more so than at the trade deadline.
You'd probably think that now that Byfuglien's moved to forward,
yeah,
and he's established himself as forward and there's less issues with him at that position, there's probably less pressure on them to move him, or less desire more so to move him. I think it's deja vu all over again for the Jets. If you think about it, last year with Ron Hainsey and Nick Antropov, and a lot of people were wondering if they would move Ron Hainsey. But they're in the same position. They're fighting for a playoff spot, like they were last year. So they're not really in a position where they... Not that they would have been sellers even if they were out of a playoff spot, because you're looking at a group of players that they're really... It's a little bit uncertain if they're going to bring them back. I think that, you know, Mark Stewart is a guy, Gary Lawless wrote about it. I think Mark Stewart's a guy that they could easily re-sign. Devin Setoguchi and Ole Jokinen, it's really, there's been no indication that they're going to re-sign them. And do they fit into the long-term plans? It's really not known right now. And do you move, if you're going to, Richie mentioned Mark Stewart playing a top four role.
Can't have that.
With Klitsam out of the lineup, though.
Doesn't matter. Both of them are top four.
I'm just saying that's what he's going to be playing for the rest of the year. Yeah. So if you're moving Mark Stewart out, who's going to be playing that top four role when you're still going for a playoff spot, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there will be any movement. I think, you know, Richie mentions maybe a guy like Devin Setoguchi, if there is an offer because he's a pending UFA. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. I think because of the fact that you have the key UFAs that are playing roles, and again, Ole Jokinen is another guy, that if you're going to move him, you know, Jim Slater might be able to play third line center, but right now he is playing a role that is better suited to him as compared to earlier in the season.
I don't think they're going to trade out Ole Jokinen. It would not surprise me if they tried to re-sign Ole Jokinen as well, you know, because they don't seem to have anybody that's ready to step into that third line center role next year. Now, of course,
I think if you're going to re-sign, you know, the problem with Jokinen being a third line center, he doesn't play that third line center role.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's a guy, and he's hard to play with. Right now you have him playing between two shooters, and he's a shooter. Mm-hmm. The roster is constructed in such a way that Jokinen doesn't really make sense to bring back. You should be able to go out there and find somebody else in the free agent market to play third line center. But I do agree that if they don't feel like they have anybody, I don't think they're going to go internally here.
Well, I don't know.
And that's why they can't make a trade. Sorry to interrupt. That's why they can't make a trade. As he mentions, they're in this race, and you mentioned as well, they're in the race. They can't trade any of these guys out. Like Setoguchi, they can't just trade out because they literally have nobody to play that spot. So they have to trade and then make another trade. Jokinen, they can't trade out. They have nobody, as you mentioned, Slater, and he has played the third line role for Winnipeg in the past, but that's strictly checking role. He can't play it with Byfuglien. So he's not, I don't think, going anywhere unless he's been replaced also. The only thing is maybe they had a defenseman and pushed Stewart down. And Stewart's played really well lately, but he's not a top four guy. Like, this is a guy earlier in the year who wasn't playing top six quality. Now he's playing top four quality in for a bit, but in reality, we know what he is. He's your reliable bottom pairing defenseman who's not going to add much offensively. He's going to block shots, be good in the room, and play a tough game.
Here's why I don't think that they're necessarily going to... I mean, I agree with everything you said, that in an ideal world, he's not in your top four. I think that they're not going to... who would they trade out to acquire a top four defenseman at this point in
time?
That's
why I expect it to basically be a swap, maybe, of Setoguchi for a pick and then somebody else.
Yeah, I think it was San Jose last year, if I recall correctly. Traded away a defenseman. I don't remember who the defenseman was, but then I believe they reacquired Scott Hannon for a seventh-round pick. Yeah. You know, they traded away one
Doug
player.
Murray.
Yeah, maybe it was Doug Murray.
That was a great move.
You know, They got a second round pick for Doug Murray or whatever it was from Pittsburgh.
Montreal.
That's right. They got a second round pick from Pittsburgh for Doug Murray, right. And then they traded a seventh. There's no reason that you can't make two moves to fill one spot or trade one and then do a separate move altogether.
And Drew, not only are the Jets in the middle of a playoff spot, they're right in there, a couple points back. Obviously, they have the most games played out of those teams, but they're playing well. 10-3-1 since Paul Maurice. So Kevin Cheveldayoff, if you're him and you're thinking, well, why am I making a move if the group that I have right now, I got Evander Kane back and Jim Slater's back now after not playing since October, why does he, what's the reason to make a move? And to me, he would make a move if he gets draft picks for one of these players. And that's it. I don't know if you're going to get a player in return for one of these players, but if you give up a third or fourth round draft pick to get Setoguchi, for example, then you might take it.
I think with Setoguchi, his impact has been so minimal this year that if you trade him, you know, okay, you shrug your shoulders. I mean,
but you have to be able to fill a third line spot, Drew.
Well, I mean,
if nobody on this team who can fill a third line spot.
I get that. Yeah. I get that. But I mean, I mean, Devin Setoguchi himself hasn't really done much to.
Fair enough, but at least he can score. And the other thing, and he's been, you know, is the shootout goal, so you could be a factor down the stretch. But this is the thing: you can't. When you're the Jets and you're as close to the playoffs as they currently are, and you look at the standings this morning, they're 2 points out. Dallas is 2 games in hand. I think Dallas is in the driver's seat right now. But based on what we saw from the Jets last year when they thought they had even a chance, and they're closer this year, I don't see them selling. Like, this is the thing. You want to look at it value-wise. If you get a fourth-round pick for Setoguchi, what's the value in that monetarily? As compared to the possibility of making the playoffs and making some playoff dough. I'm talking from an ownership perspective.
You're 100% right that a fourth round pick is relatively meaningless. I mean, I don't know exactly what it equates to, but or how many fourth round picks actually have an impact in the NHL on average, but I'm sure it's probably 15%.
They're actually calculating that at the Sloan Analytics Conference, so they'll have that stat for us later today.
But you're right. I get that. Obviously the home playoff dates would be more valuable than whatever you would get in return for Devin Setoguchi. Now, if somebody's willing to overpay you and you can recoup what you traded for him in the offseason, I believe...
No chance.
I know there's no chance. I know, but you never... Every time we say no chance, we see a general manager do something equally stupid.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's no chance of the second-round pick of the value of the Jets' second-round pick, meaning like even if they get a second-round pick, it'll be picks later.
But if you could get... You're right. I agree with
but
you
But it won't
that.
Be a second-round pick as far as... I mean, I'd be surprised based on his play if it was anything above a third.
Right. And then what point in time is the draft pick not valuable enough for you to want to make the deal?
That's right.
Which is what your point was.
That's right.
Looking at
the draft pick, it might be worth it for you, if third round pick, if you have a guy who can basically play that role. The Jets have nobody. Who's going to go, James Wright? Nobody in the farm.
Well, you put Thorburn back up there or something.
No.
Well, I mean, I'm saying that would be the eternal discussion.
Right?
I think the combination of the Jets, where they are in the standings, and the fact that they're playing the best hockey of the season is going to equate to not very many moves.
I agree.
Could they be buyers? I mean, we haven't said anything. What? We're just talking about sellers. Could they be buyers?
As he makes a good point, though, is what are they using to buy?
Well, draft picks would be their only real... Unless they're going to make a huge blockbuster deal.
No, this year's draft is not supposed to be a strong draft, so keep that in mind. But they're not trading any first-round picks, so there you go. Their second-round pick from this year is gone. Are they trading a second-round pick from next year's strong draft for a chance to get beat by Chicago or Anaheim in the playoffs?
Yep.
I wouldn't think so. It doesn't make any sense based on what we've seen from the organization so far.
I see them doing very little. Maybe a swap, as I mentioned. Maybe add a defenseman for a cheap draft price. But that's about it.
Yeah.
And Richie, I should mention, I don't have a problem with that.
No, I mean, this is the position they're in.
I mean,
unless you're making a big swap and changing, you know, we're talking about making a Buffon swap or something like that, which we could go on and on about that. I just don't think it's going to be done in a pressure cooking situation like it is a pressure cooker situation like the trade deadline.
Pressure cookie or pressure cooker?
Yeah, exactly. Cooking, I said. Yeah,
I think a deal with any big deal, if they do one, is going to come in the offseason or at the draft.
And he hasn't made one big trade. Kevin Cheveldayoff made a player for player trade yet.
No, he hasn't. It's only been players for draft picks.
Not one player for player trade. And this is the third season. So, I mean, we're going to see a big deal here. He hasn't done a player for player trade.
Unless the internal pressure to make the playoffs this year is so overwhelming I don't believe it is.
It's not.
Yeah, I don't believe it is.
Trouba and Shifley playing well, it's not.
Anyway, I think at this point in time, even if they don't make the playoffs, they fall a couple points short. and obviously we're getting way ahead of ourselves. The development of Trouba and Scheifele have been enough of a positive this year. And Blake Wheeler, I thought, has improved this year as well.
Yeah, but I mean, we know Blake Wheeler is.
Right. But I think the development there would say that the future is still bright. It's not like it's been dimmed or anything at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we can get on a bigger scale and talk about what that means in respect to Chicago and San Jose and all those teams. But yeah, I mean, that's the view.
That's what we have all summer for. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the other Central Division teams as it comes to the trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the NHL Trade Deadline Preview Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes past 8 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg in studio with you. NHL Trade Deadline Preview Show leading up to Wednesday's NHL Trade Deadline. We'll have all-day coverage for you here on TSN 1290. Gets underway 6 a.m. with the big show. They'll go right up till 11 a.m., and I believe, Richie, you're there with Rick Ralph from 11 to 3?
Yeah, it should be fun.
Richie from 11 to 3 with Rick Ralph, and then Hustler and Lawless, and then we put a bow tie on the evening,
you know, Drew,
6 to 8 with NHL Midweek.
Well, a question for you. You know, when we came out of the break, you know, Drew mentioned it's Drew, Richard, and Ezra, and I noticed the bumper now. They made some new bumpers for us, and the bumper now says Drew, Ezra, and Richard. Why was the decision made to bump me in front of Richard? It's just odd. It's always been Drew, Richard, and Ezra. Now it's Drew, Ezra, Richard. I don't know. I don't know if you guys noticed.
I noticed that.
I think the reason is that when eventually they kick you off the show, they can just remove the word Ezra and it can just become Drew and Richard, as opposed to having to retape the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easier to delete
you. If it's Drew, Ezra, and Richard, it just becomes Drew and Richard at that point in time.
Right.
Getting back to the NHL trade deadline, obviously the first big domino fell right before game time last night for the Buffalo Sabres, as it happened. They were in action against the San Jose Sharks. They beat the San Jose Sharks in a game that I don't think anybody paid any attention to, given the news that that happened right before faceoff. The Buffalo Sabres trade out Ryan Miller and Steve Ott, both of whom are unrestricted free agents at the end of this year. Ryan Miller, their longtime goaltender. Steve Ott, their captain this year. They trade them to St. Louis.
Co-captain.
The other co-captain was Thomas Vanek.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Traded to the St. Louis Blues in exchange for Yaroslav Halak, the goaltender, Chris Stewart, the forward, William Carrier, who is a prospect, a first-round draft pick in 2015, and a third-round pick in 2016 that becomes a first-round pick in 2014 if the Blues either make it to the Western Conference Final or the Blues re-sign Ryan Miller. So it's a conditional third-round pick that I would not be the least bit surprised if it became a first-round pick this year. Let's start with that deal from the St. Louis perspective. Does this trade make them the Western Conference favorite, or are they still a couple pieces away?
I don't think it makes them the favorite, Drew. I think Chicago is still the best team. Are they a couple pieces away? I don't know if they're a couple pieces away. They may be one piece away. I'm a little bit... Everybody's, you know, kind of seems to be going crazy about how this is going to be great for St. Louis, great for St. Louis. And I think it's going to be good for St. Louis. But the Steve Ott inclusion is odd for me. Why do you need Steve Ott? I mean, I know the face-offs, all that stuff, but... And he's a grinder. He can play that Hitchcock style. But if you're going to go through Chicago, you need to be able to score. And I think some people have said, you know, St. Louis lost last year to Los Angeles. I heard Pierre LeBrun say that, and he's done a good job covering the story.
They always lose to Los Angeles.
But, you know, they played against Los Angeles last year, and one of the reasons they lost was that, you know, Jonathan Quick outplayed Yaroslav Halak. And I agree with that. But another reason they lost is that nobody on their team could score against Jonathan Quick. And part of that goes on to the forwards. So you got to see it both ways. I think this move helps them. I think this move makes them a better team, certainly a bigger threat in the Western Conference, and they can go to the final. But I do not think it makes them the favorite in the Western Conference.
Richie, you make a good point. It's not really any different than the Olympics when the games are going to be low scoring and it comes down to goal scoring. You're right. And Jonathan Quick, yeah, he outplayed Yaroslav Halak. He usually outplays almost every goaltender.
That's right.
But I don't necessarily think that is the main reason. We talked about this going into this year. I thought Halak and Elliott was one of the best tandems. Now, what's happened is those two goalies have regressed a little bit. Jarl Halak and Brian Elliott aren't the goalies that they were from 2 or 3 years ago. And now the St. Louis Blues are in a position where they're not happy just to get to the playoffs. They're not happy to get to the second round. Mm-hmm. Doug Armstrong and the St. Louis Blues, they're going for it this year. The Chicago Blackhawks have won 2 cups in the last 4 years. They're looking at their team, and they're saying, you know what? We might not have as much top-end talent, but we have a very good D group, and we're probably a game-stealing goalie maybe away from winning a series and going up against them in a best-of-seven series. And you mentioned, when you talk about Blues and Hawks and them going up, I still think that the Hawks have the advantage, and I think Ryan Miller is arguably a better goalie than Corey Crawford, but when you look at the game breakers, Taves, Hossa, Kane, Sharp, all these guys go up and down the lineup.
That's right. There's a lot of game breakers you just mentioned.
They have more depth. The St. Louis Blues are the type of team, a more patient team. They have a lot of good players, but they don't have that level of elite scorer, and you know that's why they might not be done making moves. They might be in the Thomas Vanek sweepstakes.
Who
knows?
Team but, to have won the Cup without that elite scorer?
It's a good question.
There hasn't really. It's been a while.
Well, I mean, the Devils, like 95.
Yeah, but the Devils still had Eliash. And
that 95 team, maybe, because they didn't have that. That was before Eliash's time.
Yeah. Could we call Claude Lemieux an elite scorer?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the kind of guy you're looking at, like you know that yeah. kind of. But when I think about it, you look back at all the teams, even the Carolina team that won, Tampa that won. Those teams didn't, you know, contend for 10 years. But St. Louis, Richards, Lecavalier, and then Carolina Stahl, I believe, at 100 points a year, they won the Cup. Brendan Moore, I mean, they're. You know, Brendan Moore's more the type of guy they have, but they don't have any Stahls on their team in terms of 100-point guys.
Right.
So it's difficult to make that run. And you look at Los Angeles, I mean, okay, you could say Los Angeles 2 years ago, but they don't have anybody at Kopitar's level. You could argue they don't have anybody at Carter's level, even maybe Steen. But so I like the team. The team is tough to play against. Big. We know all that stuff. Big, hard on the puck, Hitchcock, blah, blah, blah. Miller's going to help for sure. But in the 2-1 game, can they get the second goal?
Well, can they get the first goal? Never mind. I mean,
they can get the first goal. They have enough scoring.
Yeah.
It's the second, third one, right? I mean, that's sure. the thing. It's the third one, really. The 3-2 games that you see all the time now yeah. is can they get that goal? And again, are they they're the second best team in the Central, I think. But it's close. I think Chicago's better. And St. Louis has not fared well against good teams this year. And I think it's not surprising. Now, L.A., San Jose, Anaheim would all be tough for them. I mean, who's going to... They can play in Bomeister and Pietrangelo against the Getzlaff-Perry line if those teams match up in the conference final. But, I mean, can they keep up scoring-wise with those guys?
It's a fair question. If we've determined that they still should be in the market for another goal scorer...
Who are they trading now?
Well, that's my question.
That's the one thing also I forgot to mention. Stewart, I mean, I don't like Chris Stewart. He's fine. He's big. He can skate. He'll play 35 out of 82 games. Like he'll play all the games, but he'll play 35 of 82.
He'll be a presence in
35. Yeah. And 25 goals probably if he plays in those games. Talented. And I don't think they like this inconsistency, but you're trading a scorer out of a team that can't really score for a guy, Steve Ott, who is not a scorer. So I think that was a small thing in that trade that kind of was peculiar. And maybe there's some other trades to go, but I don't think they're big trades, Drew. If you're talking about adding a big guy, a big scorer, who do they have? They traded a first-round pick for Bomeister before. They traded possibly 2 first-round picks. They can't trade one of these conditionals to somebody else.
The only other trade chip that they have left that they haven't used is Jake Allen, and it sounds like they refuse to use Jake Allen.
And what are you going to get for a prospect goalie, Drew? Look at Bishop went for. I mean, you're going to get, you know, you don't know.
You're not going to, I mean, well, Bishop went for what, Corey Conacher?
Yeah, Bishop went from them to Ottawa for a second, and then from Ottawa to Tampa for a Corey Conacher. So, I mean, you're not getting much. You're not going to get Bainbreaker for that.
I don't think, though, that when you're talking about Jake Allen, you're going to get as much as you would for Ben Bishop. Ben Bishop was already in the NHL. Jake Allen's now still in the AHL. But, I mean, you know, going back to that trade for the St. Louis Blues, though, it's a good trade. I really like Steve Ott. He's like your 15-goal, 150-penalty-minute guy. He's got 20 goals before. But, no, he's not going to be the guy in a series against the Chicago Blackhawks that you're going to throw out there and he's going to be the guy that's scoring every night. Yeah, sure, he could play a role like
yeah.
he could score as a complementary player, right. But all of their success is really dependent on the Steen, Backes, Ochi line. Those guys none of those guys are 45, 50 goal scorers. It's a great line, but really when you're going up against those top teams in the West, that's the issue. Now, this team has the ability, Richie, as you mentioned, to grind it out, keep the games low scoring. Ryan Miller, as we just saw against the Carolina Hurricanes, he can stop everything. He can shut you out.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's obviously makes them a better team, but does it make them good enough against, again, and they're gunning for Chicago, they're gunning for LA, they're gunning for Anaheim, San Jose, and all of those teams have more top-end talent, and so it's a big gamble, and they gave up the draft pick and all that, but it's...
If Alex Steen reverts back to regular form previous years, do they have a perennial 60-point guy on their roster?
No, and then the same team they've been for the last, you know, 3 years where they haven't had that 60-point guy.
65, 70, certainly not 70-point guy. I mean, back of Steen, those guys can get to that 60-point level based on, I think, their talent level. But, and I like Jaden Schwartz, Terrence Angley, these guys are talented guys. But I just, and Drew, this, I'm not saying this isn't a great team that could very well make the run here, but let's not anoint them cup winners just yet.
Well, we're talking about when it gets to the third round. Yeah,
if, the same, if they get to the third round, as he said, Chicago's in the second round now.
Well, yeah, second round. So, I mean, even in the second round, and it's a tall task. How many teams shut down the Blackhawks?
The Western Conference playoffs are going to be incredible this year.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at the remainder of the Central Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, NHL Trade Deadline Preview Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290, TSN1290.ca. McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day as well. It's our NHL trade deadline preview show. We continue our look at the Central Division, and we just talked about the St. Louis Blues, how they're chasing the Chicago Blackhawks to be the best team in the Central Division. So might as well look at the Chicago Blackhawks and what they're looking to add come Wednesday's NHL trade deadline. Don't really have many unrestricted free agents on their roster. Michael Hanzus is, you know, probably playing the most significant role. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. So is Brandon Bolig, but he's not really doing much for that team, playing the fourth line role right now. You know, if you look at the Blackhawks, it seems to me, and this has sort of been an ongoing thing for the Blackhawks, that they haven't been able to fill that second-line center spot behind Jonathan Toews. And it seems like, again, this is something they're going to be targeting at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that they've said this for a while, but they don't seem to need one. They've won two cups. So, I mean, when you have wingers like Hossa, Kane, Sharp, and Kane, and Sharp have had cups of coffee at center, you don't really need the center there. I mean, you'd prefer to have one, but you look up the middle, and you just look up the... If Toews, and that's really all, at the end of the day, kind of all that matters, though, the way he plays. And you look at their wings, they have such strong wings. I mentioned Hossa, Kane, Sharp, you have Versteeg, Bickle, Shaw, you know, you have guys who can play everywhere, and Shaw and Saad. And so you're loaded up front. I think you would like to add a second line center, Drew. I think last year they bring in Hanzus, they needed help at the face-offs.
Yeah.
At face-off, and Toews and Hanzus now are there. Obviously, Hanzus, you mentioned, is a pending UFA. They have basically their whole roster signed up for the foreseeable future. So, the question is, that second-round pick, they're willing to trade draft picks for a second-line center, I believe. But they're not going to sell the farm for one based upon the fact that they're, I think, the best team in the league right now. So they'll make a move, and they probably won't be shy with draft picks, but they won't be over-aggressive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they've tried everyone from Michael Hanzus to Brandon Saad, Brandon Peary, Peter Regan, all of these players. And as Richie mentioned, you know, they just keep chugging along atop the Western Conference. And if they want a second-line center and they're going to trade these draft picks, I don't think it's a rental. I think it's somebody that they think that they can sign. And you mentioned Michael Hanzus. That was a really underrated... We heard about that a lot in the playoffs, but it was a really underrated move there. Michael Hanzus can take faceoffs and kill penalties and play the third, fourth line role for the Chicago Blackhawks. And they've got Marcus Kruger there, and he's quietly done a really good job on the third line, even though the penalty kill has been a big problem, for the Chicago Blackhawks this year. You know, really the focus has been on, for them, are they going to maybe go after a backup goalie? I don't even think they're going to do that. I think Antti Raanta, even though he's not playing as much since Corey Crawford came back, when he was playing, when Corey Crawford was out, he did a good job, and you're hearing the names Brodeur and all that. I don't think that's going to happen. I think if the Hawks make a move, it'll be a minor move. And, you know, they've made a few minor moves already this year. Regan was one of them. I don't think with the way that roster is constructed, Richie, you've got essentially the same defense as last year. You know, Letty, you know, Brookbank, not my favorite guy, or Koska. Maybe you get a veteran defenseman there to play with Nick Letty or something like that. But I don't think I don't think they'll go after a second line center and give up the draft picks. I still think they value those draft picks.
The one thing I could see, one guy I see could kind of fit on their roster, and it's an intra division trade, and I don't know if it'll happen or not, but one guy I could see them targeting, and obviously there are cap, I mean, Chicago's right up against the cap right now. Kapke Kazemet, their space today at $837,000. So there's not a lot of room to move there. But David Legwand would fit perfectly into that second line center role because he's not the most offensively gifted guy, but he can put up some points. He's a strong two-way guy. He can skate, and they like to skate, and they like a speed game. He would fit in nicely if they can make it work cap-wise. And you have to, and I think his time, he's mentioned earlier this week, he hasn't talked to David Poile about contracts, so it seems like he's on his way out. That would make a lot of sense from the Chicago perspective.
That segues perfectly into discussing the Nashville Predators. You mentioned Legwand. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. You look at the Predators, and well, they're still, you know, on the, you know, they're still in the playoff discussion. I mean, they're a couple points behind the Winnipeg Jets in the Western Conference playoff race for the wild card spot. 2 points behind the Jets with a game in hand makes today's game, this afternoon's game, quite important.
Absolutely,
we all know that. You know, the Predators have needed what the Predators have needed from the day that they began in the NHL, and that's goal scoring.
That's right.
And I don't think they're going to get it at the trade deadline. I think they'll trade out Legwand, and they'll probably
Can they
get a first round pick for Legwand? Bottom of the first round?
Maybe if they're desperate enough, if a team's desperate. I don't know if the Hawks would trade. Yeah, it's possible. I wouldn't put the odds that high, but I think it's possible, Drew. They need scoring. You look at their roster. They need scoring up the middle. I mean, they have Fisher, Gostad, Cullen, those guys, veteran guys who we know what they can do, right? Two-way players and all that.
Mm-hmm.
They need scoring up the middle. So that's not easy to find, and that depends on if they want to move Colin Wilson back to center, they want to keep him at wing, whatever they want to do there. But his development, obviously, hasn't come along as quickly as they'd like. Left wing also, they could use some scoring. So they need scoring up front.
So they're pretty set on the back end now.
They are set on the back end. We, you know, interviewing Barry Trotz earlier this year, he says, you know, he thinks they're set for the next 10 years on the back end. Wow. And Rene is really their goalie. So we know they want forwards and they want talent. So they're going to take draft picks, they're going to take forward prospects, but they're not going to trade for anything else.
And you know, Drew, you mentioned David Legwand, and he is a guy that most likely will move. Richie mentioned that David Poile and him, well, at least we haven't heard that they've been talking about a contract extension. And, you know, he's been with them. He was their first ever draft pick. And he's looking at it, and he's saying he's an unrestricted free agent, and he has the opportunity to join a team that's going to go on a playoff run.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nashville Predators right now, I think we'd all agree, are a long shot. Yeah, they're still in it. But, you know, they've really been struggling to score goals. And it was nice to see Pekka Rinne played in the AHL last night. And he should be coming back within the next week or so. So that's encouraging because that was a horrible injury. But you look at the team, and we really just documented it. And if you're going to trade Legwand, you'd hope that if you're not going to get a first rounder, you're going to get a second rounder. And he seems to be like a guy, Richie, that leading up to the trade deadline, and you're going to be here all day breaking down every single future consideration. I think he's a guy that once the stakes go up and you get the clock starts ticking and more teams, a lot of teams would want a David Legwand. Remember a few years back, I think it was actually 3 years back when Nashville went on a better run. Legwand was incredible in the playoffs. I think it was 2011. I might be wrong. We'll check that. But he's the type of guy that a lot of teams covet.
A first-round pick in this year is different than a first-round pick next year. So maybe a first-round pick this year could be It could be had. But it's possible that a first-round pick this year from Chicago in a bad year at the end of the first round could be had, for example, from a team like Chicago as opposed to next year. They're not going to be tossing on first-round picks, I don't think, for him.
A team that nobody's been talking about. They've just been playing well all season long, unexpectedly. They're, you know, firmly in the third spot in the Central Division playoff race. It looks like they're practically almost locked in there. They could still actually advance. They're only 3 points behind Chicago and St. Louis for the top of the Central Division is the Colorado Avalanche. And people would say, you know, we're not sure how they're doing it because they're not as talented on paper as their performance is.
No, they're pretty talented.
But they're doing it. So what are the, at this point, what's realistic for the Avalanche?
I mean, anything really. Their top lines, they've loaded them up, right? So they're playing Duchesne, O'Reilly, Parenteau, McKinnon, Stastny, and Landeskog. They're loading up those guys. The thing is, Stastny's a pending UFA, but we know that McKinnon and O'Reilly can both play center.
Yeah. So O'Reilly's a pending RFA, but it sounds like a deal's going to get done with him.
Yeah, and there's got the whole contract controversy just because of the fact that Calgary qualified him at such a high level, or signed him to such a high
offer sheet.
Their needs are clear. I mean, first off, their secondary need is secondary depth, secondary scoring and depth. Their third, fourth lines, you could certainly use some help there, especially going up against the really good teams. But their first priority is defense. And after Jan Heda and Eric Johnson, you know, they had some nice performances for some of these guys, Ginnin, Benno, all those guys, but they need to improve on defense. So they need a top four defenseman if they want to, I think, be in a serious conversation for winning a playoff round this year.
Well, it sounds like, you know, if they don't do anything and if everything stays status quo, they will meet the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round, which is obviously no... if the Blackhawks... I can see them upsetting the St. Louis Blues, but I can't see them upsetting the Chicago Blackhawks.
They'll give both teams a run for their money. I would be surprised. Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with you in that respect, Drew, because they can score quite a bit. But leaning on that defense in a seven-game series when you're playing against the same team every night is going to be very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Richie, you're right. It's acquiring a defenseman for them. You look at the bottom pairings there, Andre Benoit and Corey Sarich. You know, so you're looking at, and Corey Sarich has filled in nicely coming
Nick
over with
Holden.
Tanguay. But yeah, you're looking for a guy that can add a little bit more offense, because right now the only guy that really adds offense is Tyson Barrie. Yeah, and Heda is more of a physical punishing defensive defenseman. So yeah, this team, that's what you're going to have to do in the playoffs. That's what it comes down to. When you look at the Ducks group of defensemen, the Kings group of defensemen, forget the Chicago and St. Louis, their elite group of defensemen, which is really a notch, is a notch above every other team, those groups of D in that division, the class of the league, you really are starting to look at that. And Varlamov, I think, you know, he's been playing very well now that the personal issue is out of there. And there really isn't any need to acquire anybody. We heard that P.A. Parenteau was on the trade market. He scored a beautiful goal on the power play last night. I don't think that they're moving him. And they already acquired, don't forget, Max Talbot was acquired for Steve Downey to add a little bit of grit. I guess Downey and Roy weren't really getting along there. So if they can get a veteran defenseman, that's what I would think they would do.
Minnesota Wild. Lots of talk about the Minnesota Wild and their goaltending situation. Obviously, Josh Harding had a strong start to the year, and then he had a bit of a setback with his multiple sclerosis. You know, what are their expectations for this coming playoffs? I mean, they seem to be relatively firmly there as the first wild card team.
Yeah, the first wild card team. I don't love their chances right now. Obviously, the return of Koivu will help them. And Granlund's emergence, I think, on the Olympic scene, and then, you know, the role he's played even since come back, a short period of time, obviously, is going to help his development. But this team, if they want to make any moves, I think first off, need to add defensemen. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're relying too much on guys like Spurgeon and who can skate and all that, but Prosser, Stoner, those guys, Ballard, you need to add another top four D-man. And again, those are not easy to find, but you need to add one if you want to compete in the first round, I think, and actually have a chance to win. You need size up front. They're small up front. And you possibly need a goalie, although I think the other two needs are in front of. I think they are more important than the need to add a goalie. I think their goalies can certainly get them by if they're there. And I think if you can get them ready for the end of the year, you're okay, because you're probably going to make the playoffs here. You'll get your pretty strong position to get the first wild card. But you need to be able to have defense to handle as the St. Louis, Colorado, and Chicago. I mean, especially Chicago, you're probably going to play. Although it depends who they play. But in any event, you don't have the defense to be able to man up against those guys. You're going to play Suter 30 minutes a game. That's fine. But somebody else got to play.
Yeah.
And Brodin's a good player. And they split up Brodin and Suter. That's fine. But then somebody's playing on the other side of Suter and Brodin, who both probably aren't top four guys right now.
Minnesota Wild scare me. And I know they might face the Chicago Blackhawks.
Is it the name Wild? Is that what scares you?
No, I think in the first round, I could see them taking the Blackhawks to seven games. And the Minnesota Wild right now... Darcy Kemper has played 15 games in a row now, which set a franchise record. He's been playing very well, and you mentioned Josh Harding. And, you know, going into this, the thing that does scare me, Richie touched on it, Mikko Koivu not in the lineup. Mikko Koivu's in the lineup. I could actually see them upsetting. I know Chicago is a great team, but Danny Heatley's starting to score. Nino Niederreiter's had a great year. Granlund, that's a beer. Granlund is coming along.
It's all really, beer,
it's quarter to
it's
nine.
It's a team that I believe is one or two players away. And remember, they made the big move last year getting Pominville. And Pominville's been great this year.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very strong in the wings. Richie mentioned, they're a little bit small at center.
They're small up front, period. I mean, Parise, Pominville, Koivu. Koivu's place effort. Granlund, you're Zucker, all guys like that, you're smaller, and Coyle's a younger guy in the middle. You're small up front. You're not tough enough up front.
Yeah, and to me, this is a team that's really on the up and up. And yeah, maybe you want to acquire another defenseman.
I think you have to.
Yeah,
if you want to compete this year for a serious run. I'm not sure convinced they actually want to. I mean, they want to, but will they?
Yeah,
they'll be satisfied with
Koivu being out. Koivu being out and Harding being out and really relying on a rookie goaltender. Kemper's a rookie. He's been phenomenal if you've watched him play. I think it's going to be tough. I do think they scare me, though, because they've got a lot of weapons there. A lot of guys are scoring goals for them now.
One last team in the Central Division, that's the Dallas Stars. Right now battling, of course, with the other five teams for the final wild card playoff spot. I think they're in the driver's seat.
Did you see Jamie Benn's goal the other night?
I didn't see it, actually. No.
Unbelievable. He's playing at such a high level.
The Dallas Stars are not going to do anything that affects their future, I don't think.
No.
They're certainly, if they make the playoffs, they're certainly happy to get there, but they're not going to do anything that's going to, you know, mortgage what is a bright future in Dallas.
No, they need help on the back end. That's first and foremost. Their forward group as a 12, I actually like quite a bit. I could see them dishing off. Like, I could see a guy like Ray Whitney being traded out, even if they're making this run, because I don't think he's really going to be a factor in what they're trying to do even this year, never mind next year.
He's a UFA after the season.
Yeah, and he's over 40.
Yeah.
But their D is the issue, and do they make a move to improve that D? I just don't know if the pieces are there to make that move now. I think that's more of an off-season move.
I agree with you there. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Pacific Division in the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the NHL Trade Deadline Preview Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, coming up at the top of the hour, Craig Custance is going to join us. He's a senior writer for ESPN.com. McPhillips Toyota Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Professional Accounting Designation opens doors of unlimited career opportunity and financial reward. For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, continuing on our division-by-division, team-by-team preview of the trade deadline, we head over to the Pacific Division and look at the Phoenix Coyotes, the San Jose Sharks, and the Vancouver Canucks. We saw the Coyotes here in Winnipeg on Thursday night, losing to the Jets in the shootout. And the Coyotes really did look like the Phoenix Coyotes that you always see from Dave Tippett. They don't score a lot. They're very defensively responsible. And, you know, I don't know that they're necessarily, in my mind, they're not a playoff team. I don't think that they're going to, I think they will fall short of their attempts to get that final wild card spot in the Western Conference. But that being said, do you see them being a player come Wednesday in the NHL trade deadline?
Well, again, when you're talking about what are teams looking for, buyers and sellers, They're kind of in-betweeners, right? And they're in the same position as the Jets are, to a lesser degree, Richie, the Stars and the Canucks. They're a team that's fighting for that last playoff spot, and they're also a team right now that's kind of in flux a little bit. And we saw them, and I was telling Richie, I thought Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I can't believe Oliver Ekman-Larsson wasn't playing for Team Sweden. I thought he was the best player on the ice at times against the Winnipeg Jets. But you look at that group of defensemen, and it's a pretty good group of defensemen. And yeah, like Antoine Vermette's come along, and he's had a good season, and Marty Hanzel, good two-way player and all that. But are you going to move someone or draft picks for short-term gain? Not only no. Richie possibly getting knocked out in the first round, but not even making the playoffs.
Yeah, that's just it, Ezzy. I mean, you look at their roster, and yeah, the pending UFAs aren't many. I mean, Verbata's the one guy of consequence, I think. And Derek Morris. Derek Morris might be able to get you a nice little haul here based on the fact that he can play top four, and a lot of teams need D. That would be the guy I would think they peddle for sure. Just because you look at their roster, and Ekman-Larsson, Yandel, Schlemko, these guys can all move the puck really well. And while Morris can move the puck, the other guys can do it better. And you need more defensive defensemen, I think, in the long term. You can find one on the free agent roster, and you can cash in on Morris now. I think Morris gets traded.
What about Verbata? He's an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I think Verbata provides value to teams, too, because he can score in a limited market right now. So I know they like Verbata. I know he seems to really only have success there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they deal both of them. Don Maloney's very good at managing assets. And I see him acknowledging the fact that this isn't the year, that they can probably retool pretty quickly, that it's even possible they can bring both these guys back in the offseason. And I would deal both.
You hear a lot about, you know, the guys, oh, we're going to trade you now, but we're really interested in re-signing you. It's a lot easier to do that when you're in Phoenix, because yes, those guys, people want to play in
that's
Phoenix.
That's right.
You know, because I'd spend, you know, 12 months a year playing in Phoenix, or the winter months, you know, going from the rink to the golf course in Phoenix, and wouldn't complain too much about it.
I think both of them are moved. And I look at the teams, and we're going over right now, but we're going to continue to go over, obviously, the whole league. How many guys does he need a guy like Derek Morris? How many teams?
A lot. You could probably say 15, 20.
Yeah. And a guy who can score like Radon Verbata, who's not going to cost you an arm and a leg.
And, I mean, and obviously, if Don Maloney, as Richie mentioned, if he's going to evaluate his team and look at his team like that, then you're selling, right? So, and that's a possibility.
We know they're not buying. They don't have any cap space.
Well, you can, right. And
internal
can,
cap
and
space.
And you can be a seller. You can decide to be a seller in this situation. And as Kevin Cheveldayoff could do, he could decide to sell as well, but he's not going to do that.
You're not anticipating an outcry from the Phoenix Coyote fan?
Well, that's, and then, you know, a guy like David Moss, even. Yeah, pending UFA. I thought he played a pretty solid game here, sacrificing his body, kill some penalties.
Not flashy.
He can, you know, a team like Pittsburgh could use some depth. Maybe a guy like David Moss wouldn't hurt batting him on the back, on the bottom two lines. Yeah, I see them probably moving all of their pending UFAs. Maloney, I think, will identify the market, the fact that there's room to make a couple moves, and he can fill these spots pretty not easily, but I think, you know, with some time in the off season, he can fill. He doesn't need 3 years to fill these spots.
Quickly, we go to Northern California and the San Jose Sharks, where, you know, most of their guys are under contract, so they don't have you know, they have a couple unrestricted free agents coming up. Dan Boyle being the primary one of them, although he seems like a kind of guy who, we've heard a lot about the, you know, what's he going to re-sign for if he re-signs, and what they're offering.
I want to get in here, Drew, on the San Jose, because you look at their roster. They're healthy. They don't really need anything except for defense. I think they still need defense. But you look at their forwards. I mean, their center is just ridiculous. You know, Thornton, Pavelski, Couture, and your wings. If you're healthy on the wings and you're comfortable with some, you know, I could see them possibly adding a, you know, a top nine winger. But they don't have to, you know, getting guys like Torres and different guys on depth, maybe adding a fourth line.
Get a guy like Thomas Hertl back.
Yeah, Hertl back is obviously a huge thing. Maybe a one forward depth guy. And then your top six on defense, obviously Vlasic has become more well-known with his play at the Olympics. Boyle's not great defensively. I don't think, well, maybe not as effective as he once was. They have guys who can move the puck, like Demers, and guys who can move, like, you know, skate, like Irwin. I feel like they want one more guy there that they can rely on in their top six and have a little more internal competition for a spot on the back end. So I think a top six defenseman, and it doesn't have to be top two, even top three. Top
depth
six
defenseman.
Yeah, but a guy who can play. Yeah. Not a guy who's going to be the seventh or eighth guy.
Right.
And a depth forward who can play on the fourth line is really all they need.
Yeah, earlier this season they acquired Tyler Kennedy. So he's playing on the third line there. He's a guy that's had a lot of success with Pittsburgh. And they just got Rafi Torres back. He scored in his first game back. They acquired him. And he was really a good addition there.
And Havlat's come back this year, too.
And Havlat's come back. He's not the same player that he was, but in the playoffs, he's useful. And San Jose, you know, look at their team, and Stalock's been really good as a backup goaltender. Niemi's had a great year. There's not a lot that this team needs to do. Yeah, Richie mentioned maybe get a bottom-pairing defenseman, or maybe add a complimentary winger to play in your bottom four. But right now they're humming along here, and they've been tough to beat at home, especially. Mm-hmm. Don't expect many moves there. Actually,
I wouldn't expect many moves there. They seem to be doing well. Not a big retool at the very least. Something like you said, Richie, depth guys to really, you know, increase internal competition. Let's head to break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to be joined by Craig Custance, ESPN.com senior writer, to talk about the NHL trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, NHL trade deadline preview show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the NHL trade deadline preview show. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, and as we are wont to do on this fine show, especially when we're previewing something, we're going division by division, team by team. Going to be joined by Craig Custance, ESPN.com senior writer, in a couple of minutes to continue our discussion regarding the trade deadline. Obviously, if you're just joining us, or if you, you know, managed to go off the grid last night, you may not know, but the Buffalo Sabres made the first big deal, trading Ryan Miller and Steve Ott to the St. Louis Blues in exchange for goaltender Yaroslav Halak, forward Chris Stewart, prospect William Carrier, a first-round draft pick in 2015, and a conditional third-round draft pick in 2016 that could become a first-round pick in 2014 if Miller re-signs with the Blues or the Blues make it to the Western Conference Final.
Timmy was asking during one of the breaks, you know, whether Hitchcock, obviously coaching St. Louis now, was coaching Dallas at the time that Ott came up. He actually got fired in 01-02. Ott came up in 02-03. But it doesn't mean he didn't coach him at training camp. And I think also, to Timmy's point, and it's a good point, Doug Armstrong was, of course, part of the Dallas Brain Trust, I believe, when Steve Ott was drafted. So there are a little bit of history in that respect.
Yeah, I really like, you know, we were talking, Richie's mentioning Steve Ott might not be the guy that takes them over the top, but he is a guy that will be very effective in the playoffs. He's a guy that is very physical, good leader. As we know, he was the captain, co-captain, and then Drew, you corrected me, as Vanek was traded, became the captain. He's a guy that I think a lot of teams wanted, and, you know, now they got even more grit. They've already got Brendan Morrow there, and, you know, he's the type of guy that, you know, he'll be good in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the question is it enough for the St. Louis Blues? Does this, you know, leapfrog them over the Chicago Blackhawks? And, you know, that's what obviously time will tell on that factor. One more team we can look at. Craig just needs another couple minutes before he's ready to join us. Another team we can look at in going back to the Pacific Division is the Los Angeles Kings.
Yep.
And, you know, the Los Angeles Kings are very similar to how they were, at least in my mind, to the team when they won the Stanley Cup in that year. A team that just couldn't score for whatever reason. Now, they have more firepower now, given that they have Jeff Carter.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
You know, but for whatever reason, they can't put the puck in the net, and that seems to be what they're looking to improve upon when it comes to the trade deadline. There's a lot of talk that they're in the market for a scorer.
Well, you talked about this during the Olympics, Richie. Going into the Olympics, they'd won 2 out of 10 games. They were on a big slide there. Dustin Brown has really struggled this year.
Mm-hmm.
Andre Kopitar hasn't been scoring like that we were expecting him to score. Jeff Carter, of course, great scorer. And, you know, this team, you look at the team a couple of years back that won the Stanley Cup, and then you look at them now, and all of a sudden some of that offense is starting to dry up a little bit. And you'd have to think that they'd be interested in a Matt Molson, in a Thomas Vanek. Molson, obviously, we all know, used to play for the LA Kings.
That's right.
So, yeah, they're always looking for more scoring when you're stacking yourself up against these other teams.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from ESPN.com, senior writer Craig Custance. Craig, good morning. Thanks very much for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure, as always. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm great.
That's good. Craig, obviously we want to start with the trade that went down right before puck drop yesterday, sort of interesting timing. That's Ryan Miller and Steve Ott heading out to St. Louis. The Sabres get a package of Yaroslav Halak, Chris Stewart, a couple draft picks, and a prospect that admittedly I'm not too familiar with in William Carrier. We always, you know, the nature of the beast is that we always look for a winner and a loser. But on paper, and looking at this trade, does this seem like the kind of trade where both teams can be called a winner for how it went down?
Yes, but I think in this case, one team has an edge in that I think the Buffalo Sabres got a huge return for these guys. And that's not a criticism of the St. Louis Blues. I love that GM Doug Armstrong is going for it. I mean, this sends a clear message to his team. I think now you have Ryan Miller, and you can compete with the Blackhawks. You can compete with Jonathan Quick and the Kings. And one of the interesting things that Doug said last night during his conference call was that, you know, they've run up against Jonathan Quick now in the last couple of years, and it's just a stone wall. And now you have Ryan Miller, and he's kind of the equalizer. You could say it's a coin toss between those two guys. So I like it from the Blues' perspective because of that. And I like that they didn't give up a couple of their better prospects. They didn't give up Jake Allen. They didn't give up Dmitry Yastin. Now, I like it a lot better for the Buffalo Sabres and Tim Murray. I just think he got a huge haul. And the fact that he's you know, you can mention Halak, and I think he's going to probably move him. And then you have Chris Tuer, who he can move again as well. And you have a first and potentially another first. And a prospect, I mean, for a goalie in a goalie market, that's it's almost impossible to trade a goalie market, because if Ryan Miller wasn't going to St. Louis, where else was he going to go? So there was a lot of challenges in getting this deal done if you're Tim Murray and the Buffalo Sabres, and I think he did really well here.
Craig, there's a lot of big names out there, a lot of potential players moving. One of the guys that we wanted to first start off with is Ryan Kesler. We heard that he's asked for a trade, and then he came out and said that he didn't ask for a trade, scored a goal yesterday shorthanded for the Vancouver Canucks. What's the latest on Ryan Kesler, and do you think the Vancouver Canucks will move him?
I think it's possible. I don't know. Here's my belief with Ryan Kesler is I believe they're willing to move him, and he may not have actually, you know, have gone to the offices of Mike Gillis and asked for a trade. But at the same time, it could have been communicated that he's open to it. He's got some control over that. And if you're the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, you don't have to look at how much value the Buffalo Sabres have gotten by moving all of their players before their value, you know, while they're kind of still in their prime, while they have a premium value. And I think if you're Mike Gillis and you're Lawrence Gilman in Vancouver, you have to say, you know, maybe we have a couple guys in Ryan Kesler and Alexander Edler where we can hit home runs and deals. And now the challenge is, if you're Detroit or if you're Columbus or a couple of these other teams that have been rumored to be interested in Ryan Kesler, I believe the asking price is huge. And as it should be, because you're getting a guy who's not a rental. He's still in the prime of his career. He's a guy that can help you win playoff games. But it's going to be a huge asking price, and that's what these teams have to weigh right now.
You know, Craig, how do you, if you are Vancouver, you look at San Jose, kind of change the complexion of their team on the fly, but they have guys like Couture and Hurdle and got young guys coming through the system. Vancouver's pretty bare there. How do they do this?
Well, right, so there's more pressure on them. So San Jose was able to do their refresh, as Doug Wilson called it, and they were able to do it without having to trade their huge core guys. It's one thing to move Ryan Clough and Douglas Murray. It's quite another to move Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton, which they didn't have to do. And in Ryan Kesler, we're talking about kind of a Joe Thornton kind of player in his impact on the team. So, but I think to your point, they just don't have the Hurdles and the Couture in Vancouver, and there's this age gap. They just don't have that player in that 22 to 25 year old range that you need to have in the NHL to compete right now. And so I think that's the thinking in Vancouver, is they can sit here and go, if we can move one of these guys, as much as we may not want to do it right now because we're still, think they're a playoff team, but you can fill this huge need, and I think the need is at center, and get a 22, 23, 24-year-old potential high-end top two-line center to do it. You have to consider it.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Craig Custance of ESPN.com. Craig, right before we had you on, we were talking about the Los Angeles Kings and how that, the Kings, for whatever reason, despite having, Anze Kopitar and Jeff Carter and Dustin Brown and Mike Richards to a lesser extent, they're just having a lot of difficulty putting the puck in the net, much like they did prior to acquiring Jeff Carter in the year they ended up winning the Cup. Are the Kings a top six goal scorer away from really getting back into that upper echelon of the Western Conference and really becoming one of the San Jose's, the St. Louis's, the Chicago's, the Anaheim's that are contenders to come out of the West?
See, I think they already are. I honestly, I would still like to see GM Dean Lombardi do something, but I don't think it has to be dramatic. To me, it's just one of those things where this team has gone through a cold spell, And that starts to build upon itself. But you saw in Sochi, I mean, Kopitar and Doughty and Jeff Carter, these guys all had huge tournaments, and they're certainly capable of breaking through with the roster they have. And all that being said, I still expect Dean Lombardi to do something. And sometimes it's psychological as much as anything. If you're struggling to score goals, and all of a sudden, Thomas Vanek walks through that door, that eases the pressure on everybody. So personally, I don't think the Kings have to do anything dramatic. But at the same time, I would like Dean Lombardi to, we've heard Sam Gagner's name mentioned with the LA Kings, and that's kind of quieted a little bit. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that resurface if that's a deal to be made with Edmonton. So I don't think the Kings have to do anything dramatic. I still consider them, as we speak right now, one of the four best teams in the Western Conference. But at the same time, I think Dean Lombardi owes it to his guys to give them some support right now.
Craig, last year before the NHL trade deadline, it was the Pittsburgh Penguins that really made the big moves, acquiring Brendan Morrow, Jerome Iginla, Douglas Murray. Do you think there's a team that is going to do that, be that aggressive before this year's trade deadline?
Well, I think we saw it, right? Like the Blues, that was a huge message. And you know, it was different positions. But, I mean, bringing in Steve Ott and Ryan Miller and, you know, and asked Doug Armstrong last night, are you done? And he said, yeah, you know, we think we are. But he's like, you never say never. And so I think the Blues are going to, when all is said and done, they're going to be the team we look back at and say, you know, they made the biggest splash. Now, if somebody goes and gets Ryan Kessler, I mean, that's another conversation. And if the Rangers still move Ryan Callahan, that where he ends up, that's going to be a significant addition. And then whoever gets Panic is significant. But, you know, I think there's also a lesson to be learned from the Penguins last year, because Ray Sherrill was ultra aggressive at the trade deadline, and it didn't necessarily add up to a Stanley Cup. And so I think a lot of teams look at a guy like Stan Bowman, who kind of just quietly tweaks his team, maybe adds a depth defenseman or a third or fourth line center. And sometimes that's all you need to make a run.
Craig, you mentioned Ryan Callahan. I mean, Steve Bartlett's asking price to me is a little out there. Do you see, you know, we heard earlier this week, 99% chance he gets traded. I don't know if I believe it being that high, but how do you see that situation going?
Well, it's interesting because I don't get the criticism of Steve Bartlett and Ryan Callahan, because to me, that's his market value. And if you guys look at the summer free agent crop, it's not particularly good, and it's only going to get worse as guys sign between now and July. And the other thing is the cap's going to go up. So there's a premium right now on talent. And yeah, we can all sit here and go, you know, Ryan Callahan's the kind of player that we wouldn't be surprised if there's a decline in his skills. And that's a lot of money and a lot of term for a guy that has an injury history. But at the same time, I mean, that's the market price. I think if Ryan Callahan hit the free agent market tomorrow, that's what he's going to get. And when he looks around the room in New York and the Rangers, I mean, none of those guys took hometown discounts. I mean, Henrik Lundqvist has a huge deal. Brad Richards has a huge deal. Rick Nash has a huge deal. So, you know, I don't get people that are upset that Ryan Callahan is trying to cash in.
Do you think he'll get 6.5 on the market?
I think he does, yeah. I do. All it takes is one team to... I mean, look at some of the deals we saw last year, and that was with the cap coming down. And I think that it's such a thin market, and there's going to be so many teams that have money to spend. They're going to look at this guy, and you saw him in the Olympics. I'm sure Dan Bylsma loved what he saw. If Pittsburgh's interested at the deadline, or, you know, I mean, he just wins guys over. And I think he does get that on the market.
That's interesting. I mean, I just think he's so limited, not so limited, but he's limited offensively, and the wear and tear in his body seems like a guy that, I mean, you look at the David Clarkson contract, Craig, I just wonder if some GMs are like, hold on a second here, look at Clark, I mean, Clark, this is one season, but Clarkson already, that's looking like a terrible contract.
There's a difference between me
market value, I know,
he's going to get it, and me thinking it's a good idea. But like, when have owners and GMs, when there's pressure to win and improve your team, mm-hmm. like, when has they ever shown that self-control and learn from past mistakes? They don't. Like, it's like the free agency hits and everybody becomes like a dog on a bone. And I really like it. I've seen nothing that leads me to believe this summer will be any different.
Craig Custance of ESPN.com is joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Craig, staying in the New York metropolitan area, you head down to Long Island, and they have two guys who are going to be unrestricted free agents. That's Thomas Vanek, who they acquired earlier in the year from the Buffalo Sabres, a deal that I think you can say safely at this point didn't work out how they had hoped. And the other guy is Andrew McDonald on the back end there, a guy who's, you know, it sounds like they're way far apart in contract negotiations, and he could be certainly an upgrade for a team looking for a defenseman. How do you see those two situations playing out?
Well, one thing that happened yesterday, it really helps the Islanders in that Dan Girardi signed his contract extension, mm-hmm. because I think if Girardi's available at the trade deadline, and I was told if he didn't sign, they were moving him, then that changes things on the Andrew McDonald front. Now, all of a sudden, I mean, if you're looking to add a defenseman, Andrew McDonald is probably one of the best two or three guys available. And you know, I had a conversation with his agent, I think it was last week, and we were just talking. Like, he wants to stay in with the Islanders, and he was just saying this is a guy that plays 25, 26 minutes a game. And, mm-hmm. and he, you know, he was kind of talking about his virtues, but if you look at kind of his secondary numbers, and I don't know how much into advanced stats you guys are, but, like, his Corsi numbers are awful. And so, like, you really, I'm not sure what you're getting in Andrew McDowell. I know you're getting a guy that has a lot of heart and soul, is willing to step in front of any shot, is a horse, he can eat up minutes, but at the same time, I mean, you also want to be careful what you're paying as far as the price for him. And then Vanek, I mean, I don't think Garth Snow is going to be able to recoup what he gave up to get him originally, but there's pressure on Garth Snow to at least come close. And you know, he now is the best forward available as far as scoring wingers go. So the prices are high right now. We saw it with the Ryan Miller deal. So I think he'll do pretty well for himself there.
Craig, we've been hearing some goalies that might be in play here. We've heard that Marty Brodeur, some teams might be interested in him. He might be willing to accept the trade. We've heard that the Carolina Hurricanes, because they're probably not going to make the playoffs, they might deal Cam Ward. They might deal any one of those three goaltenders. We've heard even Tim Thomas might be in play, even though Dale Talon said that he might want to re-sign him.
The new helmet.
Yeah, exactly, and he's got that brand-new helmet. Do you think any of those goaltenders are going to be moved?
It's really hard because, like, goalies, we always debate trading goalies this time of year, and it's almost like musical chairs, and there's only so many chairs available, and a huge one got filled last night. And so you have to figure out and say, sure, you know, Marty Brodeur may be willing to move, but what's a logical destination? And if you're, like, I look at a team like the Minnesota Wild, and I think they're an interesting team to look at because they probably want to shore up their goaltending. And Is Marty Brodeur at his age the answer, or are you, you know, do you feel better about going and getting Tim Thomas, or is Yaroslav Halak the guy? But I think if you're Chuck Fletcher, you're really sitting in a position of power because we're talking about three or four goalies available, and you as well as the Carolina guys, and really there's only I can only look at you know one or two teams that have a need, so you know that's a challenge for some of these teams trying to sell their goalies.
Last question, Craig, that we'll let you go.
Yeah.
Are any players that we haven't mentioned that you think are you know bigger fish that might move on Wednesday?
No, I mean it's interesting because you talk to GMs and people that are on their phones, and you hear a lot of people saying, "I think there's going to be more hockey trades." There seems to be an appetite among general managers to add players with term. So I really believe there's probably going to be a trade or two that we go, "Wow, okay, maybe we didn't see that coming." As teams kind of address those needs and wants as far as adding term and making a hockey deal. But, I haven't heard a name that isn't out there right now. That's for sure.
Craig Custance is the senior writer for ESPN.com. Craig, thanks very much for doing this morning. We always appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Take care, Craig. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Craig Custance from ESPN.com. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on our website, IllegalCurve.com, and, of course, on TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226. Or visit them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
It's minus 48 outside right now.
Yeah, we know.
Okay, I know.
It's
March
1st.
I know we're tough. We're from Winnipeg. We're used to like 5 month winters. I got out of my car today and I was like, why do I live here?
Don't blame me.
Like, my skin. Like, and I'm not talking about like I was outside for a bit. I'm talking about like walking from the car, from my house to the car. Mm-hmm. Your skin burns. It's enough of this.
Days like this, my wife really doesn't like me. She's like, "Why did you make me come to this climate? I could be in warmer, southern U.S. climates. Instead, I'm stuck here."
Drew, don't worry. You can go anytime.
They'll take you in Kentucky.
Yeah, it'll sound weird though when it's just the "and as he Richard" or in the intro bumper.
We'll just auto tune you.
That's okay. You've done that before. And I'm not sure how that went over, but I laughed when I heard that. Anyways, continuing on with our trade deadline preview show, let's look at the Edmonton Oilers, because you know, they've got a lot of guys that they're apparently willing to sell. Now, are they overvaluing all those guys? That's a separate issue altogether. But we've heard the name Alex Hemsky. He's an unrestricted free agent. Ryan Smith, an unrestricted free agent. We've heard the name Sam Gagne. He's not a UFA, so he probably holds more value. You know, the Oilers are talked about. They've been talked about, you know, for as being trade partners for the bulk of this year, once it was apparent that this year was a wash for them.
You look at their roster and you see a bunch of UFAs, most of which will have no effect on other on teams that are contending, right? Because, you know, Ryan Jones, for example, a guy available on waivers, nobody picked him up. Maybe you want to do a salary swap, but his salary isn't very big. Ryan Smith, and I have a ton of respect for Ryan Smith and what he's done for Team Canada, for the Oilers, but he just can't move around the ice anymore.
He should have retired 5 years ago.
Well, it's his choice. Drew, his play.
I don't know about five years ago, but a couple of years ago. You can only play one career,
so you keep playing. If you're going to get a job, go for it.
When I say should have retired, I don't mean he actually should have retired.
Yeah, Mark Fraser, Nick Schultz are guys, you know, Potter, Belov, none of those guys are going to be racing around like Scotty Niedermeyer out there. I could see Nick Schultz pulling something in out of a team like Boston if maybe they can't get Chris Phillips, and we'll talk about Boston later in the show. Otherwise, none of these guys are going to get them a first-round pick. Hemsky is the only... I mean, Gagne is a different story because he's not a pending free agent, but Hemsky is a pending UFA. We've heard the story a number of times with him being a pending UFA on a non-playoff Oilers team. But I think Hemsky can get you probably a second-round pick in this market to a team that needs a kind of a guy who can create off of the wing. And there are a few teams that need that. So I see Hemsky getting them the most return. No, nothing groundbreaking there. And then the other guys recouping, you know, third, fourth, fifth-round picks kind of thing.
Yeah, Hemsky's a guy that we've heard about now for, it seems like, 5 years.
They'll end up re-signing him to another two-year deal somehow.
I don't think so. If you listen to the interview, you saw that yesterday. Hemsky, I think, is expecting to be moved, and I think he's pretty happy about that. Hemsky's been awful this year, and he's a guy that I think, you know, we were talking about a team like the Sharks or another team that really could use a third-line winger that can add some offense. I'm not saying that he's going to go to the Sharks. I'm just saying it would probably be a team that is at the top of the standings, either in the West or the East. I could see a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins maybe being interested in Alex Hemsky. Sam Gagne, to me, you know, you look at Neil Yakupov, he took the shot from Justin Schultz, and he's walking around in that cast, and he's going to be out. And you look at the team, and, you know, Gagne, to me, seems to fit in. I always had a problem when they said the Oilers, but when he was rumored, because, you know, he's really been a pretty consistent player. He's not going to be a 90-point player, but he's a pretty consistent player, and, you know, for that team, he kind of goes with what they've got, because Horkoff is gone now. Ryan Smith, this is probably going to be his last year. Hemsky, this is kind of, you know, the tides are changing here for the Edmonton Oilers, and they're going to get another high draft pick this year. And so for me, you know, I don't think they're going to be as active as people are expecting. Everyone's saying Gagne, Hemsky, all blah 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 blah. I think Hemsky maybe, and maybe one other minor move aside from that. I don't know. I think Gagne stays there. I could be wrong about that, because apparently the Kings were interested.
I don't know. Why would he stay? I mean, what? He might as well. I mean,
Drew.
Well, it's not that. Why would he stay? It was why wouldn't they keep him? Is what I'm saying.
Well, I know what you're saying, but I mean, if I'm the Oilers at this point in time, you know,
Chicago also be.
Well, they need players for next year. That's the point, because you're going to trade away all these guys. You can't have an entire team of first overall draft picks. I mean, they're like. Like, no joke, a quarter of their starting lineup usually is first overall draft picks. And you just can't, it's not sustainable.
The team's a mess.
Isn't it? It's amazing. I mean, they're so insular, and they refuse to make any changes or think outside the box, or maybe bring in an outside consultant to actually tell them how terrible they are. It's a house of mirrors there, where they just keep praising one another. Anyways, the Oilers, we've talked about them enough. They're just, like you said, they're a mess. Anaheim Ducks, you know. They're always there. They're up at the top of the Western Conference. Anytime you got a line with, you can rely on Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. Mm-hmm. You're doing okay. Do they have enough secondary scoring to make a deep run?
Well, you know, I think they do.
Yeah, you know, you like a lot of the guys that they have, you know, kind of throughout the roster, whether it be, you know, Palmieri is a guy that you've liked, and I don't disagree with you. I think that they can kind of get with such a powerful top line. It's kind of like Chicago, although Chicago has like Kane on their secondary line. But when you have such a powerful top line, and it's you just need to get a little bit of scoring from the rest of the group. And if you're going to kind of put Solani, you know, Solani played well in the Olympics. Maybe he plays more in the end of the season because you've rested him a bit and haven't played him too much. They did lose Matthew Perreault last night to an injury. He left the game. I'm not sure what his status is. I think they'd like to add a second line scorer. even a guy like Hemsky there would make sense. Now, right wing, they're kind of, they have depth in terms of Perry and Solani, and they have their checking lines and stuff. But you know, a guy like him possibly could work there. I see different player probably fitting him. But I think second line scoring, their defense, they have a lot more depth than they used to. I think they'd probably still like to get a little more of a defensive defenseman there. I know they have Brian Allen and Fistrich and guys like that, but maybe one guy if they can swap for a defensive defenseman. But otherwise, they don't have much in the way of needs. And although Legwand, also another guy, I think could fit in well there if Perreault is out for an extended period.
Sure. They have a lot of goaltending depth, but like we talked about with Craig just last segment, it's hard to trade goaltenders.
Well, who are they going to trade?
Well, they're on the record saying they're not going to trade Hiller. He's in the UFA.
So they're not getting anything for anybody else. They're not trading Gibson, so.
Yeah,
Gibson. Gibson is the one guy that I've been reading in Anaheim is a guy that they really don't want to give up. So if it's not Hiller, it's not Gibson. And you just signed Frederik Andersen. I guess Foss would be the guy.
Yeah, but how much is he going to get?
Oh, he'd get a lot.
You think that?
Think so?
You think he would get a lot?
Look what he did when he came into the NHL last year. He was an excellent goaltender.
I know, but a lot?
He'd get something significant.
What team that's a contender needs an upgrade in goal that bad besides the St. Louis Blues that?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a contender. I think it would be a team that's looking towards next year. I think if you look at a team like the Islanders, for example, I think that they would be interested in Foss. I'm just saying that I think he is valuable and a team would like to get him.
A guy like Milan Mihalik would actually fit in well with Anaheim and kind of give them that, you know, size, and you know, he's got this knee surgery, so he doesn't skate maybe as well as he used to, but size, willingness to go to the net. But it depends on what Ottawa is going to be in position to do, whether they're going to add or subtract or just stand pat. So that's a guy also I could see possibly fitting in well on a team like that.
We're watching the highlights from their game last night where they lost to the Minnesota Wild in a shootout, the Vancouver Canucks. We talked about Ryan Kessler. You know, that's, you know, they're obviously in a state of transition for that franchise. If the deal is there for Kessler, if they can get what they want, do you believe that Kessler gets moved by Wednesday?
Yeah, I do. If they can get what they want, yeah. I think, you know, you hear young forward, top prospect, and a pick, then I do think that he does move. They need winger. They need scoring, Drew. They need scoring in the middle. If they're going to replace Kessler, they need scoring on the wings. That's what they need. I mean, they can get by on that defense. I still think that defense is not bad. It's a pretty solid defense. You need to add forwards who can score. So, will Kessler allow you to do that? And even if he does, if you do get a guy who has talent offensively, is he as good as Kessler right now? Probably not. So your playoff chances, unless you're winning every game 1-0, and you see Henrik Sedin's comments last night, you know, we played 1-0, we played well tonight, we played a defensive battle. You can't win that way after a while. It's just too hard. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to be able to score 3 goals in NHL to give yourself a shot.
Well, speaking of that, the Sedins haven't scored since 2013.
Yeah.
So,
it's unbelievable.
We talked to Craig Custance about this, Ryan Kessler. You hear Detroit's interested. You hear that Columbus is interested, Philly. Yeah. On the Ryan Kessler, you know, point there, you know, they need scoring with Kessler. And if you're going to move him, you know, if the opposite is going to become true, almost they would move him, meaning that for the last couple of years, we thought they were going to trade Luongo. We thought Mike Gillis was going to trade Luongo. So, yes, everything now points to the Vancouver Canucks moving Ryan Kessler. And Philadelphia Flyers, to me, seems like a team that would be a better fit. The Kessler situation is really, it's unfortunate for the Vancouver Canucks because they were already in trouble. And now you can see, as we mentioned on midweek show, Kessler's now jumping off the sinking ship, right?
Yeah.
So it's my heart says that he will be moved, but based on the Vancouver Canucks' previous moves at the trade deadline, I almost think that he won't be moved.
Mike Gillis hasn't been afraid to overvalue his players in what he's been demanding from other teams, mm-hmm. as we saw with Roberto Luongo. So it'll be interesting to see if he actually has a firm grasp on reality.
I wanted to mention Rob Rossi in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review he reported that before the Olympics, the Penguins were offering Brandon Sutter, Derek Pouliot, and something else for Kessler. So that's a lot.
Yeah, and I think you got to watch for Philly there.
Well, Philly, of course, signed him to an offer sheet
We actually asked Bobby Clark about that when we were on Kick, and it was an interesting answer. One other thing to look at when you're the Canucks in respect of Philadelphia is Couturier. I mean, that's the guy that would be moved, I think. Yeah. So
is Couturier, Braden Schenn, do they move maybe like a Scott Laughton, something like that? That's what Vancouver would want, Richie, because you mentioned, you know, they've got Jordan Schrader there. He's not at the level that he needs to be an impact player in their top six. So that's probably what you're looking at as far as what the Vancouver Canucks are looking for. They're looking for young forwards. That's what they're looking for, and possibly a defenseman as well.
One final team in the Western Conference, that's the Calgary Flames. Certainly been a long year in Calgary. We all knew that was going to be the case. Talk that they offered Mike Camilleri a contract extension, but he sounds like he's going to would prefer to be traded.
They're such a bad team. It doesn't make sense for him to resign there.
Unless he had significant family ties to that to the city.
Which he doesn't. He's a Toronto boy.
That's right. So Camilleri, there's Stempniak. He's also a UFA. Kevin Westgarth, but he's not going to get you much.
Nobody in value except for Camilleri.
Yeah.
Stempniak got you a fourth, maybe fifth. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of him. Camilleri, you know, we talked about Anaheim before, needing a guy who can score, needing some secondary scoring. He'd be a nice fit, and they have a little bit of room in, you know, under the cap. Not tons, but a little bit of room. If you look at a guy like Camilleri, as he's somebody that they're gonna get something for him. I could see somebody dishing off a late first for Camilleri because of his goal scoring ability, having scored in the playoffs before, and he doesn't need too much to be creative for him. I mean, he'll find the open spot. He can play. You could put the puck in the net. And he's not a high maintenance guy, meaning he doesn't need the puck on a stick all the time. He's not one of those guys. Yeah. Just getting the puck in the slot, it's behind the side or on the right side of the net. He'll put the puck in the net. It's not like a guy who is difficult to play with, I don't think. Some have questioned his effect in the room a bit. I've heard that, but I think he'll move here, and I think you probably get a late first for him.
I agree with that. I think the team that I was looking at, and they lost Pascal Dupuis, the Pittsburgh Penguins. How nice would Camilleri look playing with Crosby? I'm just spitballing here, but I think Richie's right. I think Camilleri was offered a contract by Brian Burke. He didn't accept it, or probably isn't going to accept it because it hasn't been reported. And there's a handful of teams, I imagine, that are going to be calling Brian Burke on Camilleri because he's a natural goal scorer and all that. So that's another guy that most likely will move.
Back to L.A. too. I mean, you know, it's a possibility. Sure. Molson and Camilleri both have been through the L.A. system, so the people there are very well aware of what they can do, and they both score goals, so that's a possibility.
That's it for the Western Conference. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Eastern Conference and start breaking it down team by team, division by division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's the NHL Trade Deadline Preview Show on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.